is.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
See us drive by, 808's gon' shake us. Earthquake, in on the Richter. Party at the crib, bring a friend and a sister. Cruise by, homie, do Sam Live. DUST in the back, let's ride. Dipped in the caddy, stuntin' like my daddy. Slouch real low, buzz fall out the baggy. Yoke in a circle, pullin' on purple. Flow to the show, all dough, no rehearsal. Got stress, better let that rest. These boys get annoyed, leave a void in your chest. Yes, all bad when you act too good. Roll with the punches, I think you should. Get smart, we'd rather go dumb. Big bass in the face, make your brain go numb.
Davey D, Hard Knock Radio, hanging out with you this afternoon. I want to talk to you all about a story that is now going national. As you know, there are many cities that are experiencing a surge in the coronavirus. Many people are being hospitalized, and it's causing great concern. And hence, the emphasis has been on folks to not gather in large crowds, to practice social distancing, to stay at home, etc., etc. We saw over the weekend a sideshow, which is a 40-year tradition here in the city of Oakland. Sideshow for people outside the city is basically a form of cruising where people get together with their cars and they do things like donuts and all sorts of acrobatics. In Houston, they do a similar thing. It has a different name. You name it, in different cities you have it. So that took place. And of course, there was a lot of scorn, a lot of finger pointing, a lot of people bashing the city of Oakland, et cetera, et cetera. What wasn't talked about were the underlying reasons as to why people would have been out, maybe about 100 or so people, during a pandemic. What also wasn't talked about was the fact that right here in the city of Oakland, down here by Lake Merritt, there was hundreds of people hanging out as if it was a normal Sunday. What wasn't talked about was earlier this week, traffic jams going down Highway 92 to get to Half Moon Bay, the beach, was packed. What was also not really talked about, actually it was talked about, but it was praised, was a group of mothers brought their kids together, put them in a car, and drove in a caravan through San Francisco to the house of their second grade teacher, where the kids waved from the car, and then the parents got together, and the kids in a parking lot, and the kids, I guess they sat on the roof in their attempt to do social distancing and talk to one another. What also wasn't talked about was in Brentwood, in Los Angeles, and other places, you saw throngs of people hanging out at farmers market. All these places, one would ask, were they really essential? That would be one question. Or were they practicing social distancing? The end result is the same. That virus could be carried by any number of people, and it could impact folks. But in true fashion, we're looking at these kids doing the sideshow, and folks are having a field day. So we wanted to talk a little bit about that. And to contextualize this a little bit more, we wanted to find out what's going on in the streets, period, because there are a lot of people who simply can't shelter in. Joining us on the phone, or by Zoom, we have community activist John Arthur, and John James Arthur, and we also have Nita B. from the Village. Nita, let me start off with you, and then I'm going to bring in John. I want you to give our listeners a sense of what's it like on the streets, because many people simply cannot shelter in. They say that, you know, people say it as if it's a foregone conclusion, but you're out here dealing with folks who do not have shelters at all.
That's right. And I actually want to give some context to where the term shelter in place comes from. It actually comes from advocacy around homeless folks' human rights. Shelter in place was a term that came from Western Advocacy Regional Project and advocates in New York, fighting for the human rights and creating bills of human rights bills in their various cities and states. And one of the terms that designates the human rights of unhoused folks is shelter in place. It means that homeless folks have the right, when there's nowhere else to go, homeless folks have the right to shelter in their place and not be removed, not be evicted, not be criminalized. And why this is really interesting to me that this is happening in California is that bill was presented in the state assembly about 5 or 6 years ago by Tom Amiano, and it was denied. Because of the current political climate around, you know, affordability of housing and the homeless crisis, the bill was reintroduced this year. And again, it's a bill for homeless folks' human rights. And the legislators have completely mutated that bill, where if it passes, it's not about protecting the rights of unhoused folks. It's about how it's now written, and they're still using the word shelter in place. It is now written to mandatorily herd homeless people into camps that are government run. And as this bill is, you know, circulating through our state legislatures, all of a sudden it shows up being called and it being used for homeless folks, I mean, for house folks. So now they're using a term that was created by homeless advocates to now say that people have to shelter in place who have houses. I just think it's a really weird, twisted use of the word when that's not where it came out of. And that, but in terms of, you know, the bill or the order set by the state, it says in the order, the shelter in place order, that this order does not apply to homeless folks, which is crazy. That this entire struggle around the terminology of shelter in place came from homeless rights advocates, and now it's being said that it's now for homeless folks or for house folks, and it does not apply to homeless folks.
Wow, that's crazy.
It's also a way to make sure that homeless folks in this crisis do not get shelter, or that the government does not have to provide us with shelter, because it's saying that we do not have to shelter in place. But what's happening, what I saw last night in East Oakland, I was in the 80s dropping off, you know, food and groceries and checking in on the porta potties that we got up for folks there in the different communities, and just walking around and talking to people on the streets, housed or unhoused. I heard from several different people that they were being cited. Homeless folks were being cited for not sheltering in place and were given $145 tickets. House folks were getting tickets for not practicing social distancing, and the tickets are costing them $600. So that blows my mind. But in terms of the sense that people have out in the streets, information was not getting out to people readily. I mean, a lot of people don't watch TV. People aren't, you know, keeping an eye on what's happening. And it wasn't until, you know, advocates like The Village or East Oakland Collective, Love and Justice in the Streets, Punks with Lunches, were actually going into the encampments and educating people, telling them what was up, that people were actually getting the information. In terms of the response to prevent the coronavirus from spreading in encampments, the city, the county, and the state do not have a plan in place to prevent it. The first point of intervention for homeless folks is when homeless people get sick. That's what those hotels are about. So we have almost 400 hotel rooms here in the city of Oakland that have been set aside for homeless people, and they're empty because they're not going to start putting homeless people into hotels until someone gets sick, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I want people just to sit on that for a minute. And then let me juxtapose this with John Arthur Jones. You wrote an incredible essay about the sideshow. You contextualized it in using the word privilege, what people have and what they don't have, and you gave an insight as to what many of the kids in Oakland are dealing with. And I wanted you to share that with folks, because I think many of us who roll in a certain circle, you know, we watch TV, we get the news, we're activists, et cetera, et cetera. We all feel that everybody has the same shared experience. Like somebody goes, well, they should have been watching the news. Well, many people don't even have TVs. You know, why don't they just go home is what somebody said. Why don't they just go home? Well, you know, in some people's homes, the daddy's beating the hell out of the kids and the mama. Where would you go? I had a neighbor who knocked on our door the other day wanting to come out and play, and then went to the other neighbors. Why was he outside? Because his parents said, bounce, because they wanted some free time. That neighbor went across the street to the park. But you know what? Maybe that neighbor, if he's a bit older or she's a bit older, might have shown up at a sideshow. And so what I'm just describing is something that's not unusual, but you really brilliantly broke this down. So share with us your expertise and your insight as to what we really need to know about why people may be out in these streets during a pandemic.
Yes, thank you, David D. And I want to start by, first of all, thanking you for utilizing your platform to have a wider conversation on these issues. And I'm grateful to also be a part of this with Nita, because she knows just as well as I do, as people that's on the ground, what's really happening in our city. And I think it's very important, as I begin, to remind people that prior to Rona, a lot of people in our community were already experiencing these adverse circumstances. You know, prior to this coronavirus and everything, all the resulting legislation and decisions that was made, once again, under the guise of safety, I think a lot of people have forgot that so many people in our community were already suffering from adverse circumstances. And in times of fear and crisis, there's a tendency, right? You would see either the best in humanity or the worst. And we're seeing people devolve to a place to where, once again, they are holding more accountable people who have been marginalized systemically and structurally than they are for those who are privileged. And I think privilege is also a good place to start, because when we're telling people to stay in their home, it's a privilege. We know housing is a human right, but let's be real. In Oakland, we've had intense housing crisis, and somehow people forgot that. They're saying, stay in your homes. Everyone don't have a safe place. I mean, David, you mentioned your kids in the background. It's a privilege to be able to work from home. It's a privilege at a time where our schools are closed to make sure that our kids are safe. For many of our young people in Oakland, school was their only safe place, or maybe a community-based organization like East Oakland Youth Development Center, right? And then you couple that with just the historical context of these issues, starting with the sideshow. As you pointed out, it's been going on for four decades. In fact, I had shared some thoughts a couple of weeks ago when this first started. I said, good luck trying to enforce what they're calling this shelter in place. They still have not figured out a viable solution for the sideshows. So when you're seeing young people particularly, and I think it's so important, David, especially for your viewers, many of us who are considered mature adults, our brains are fully developed. We have the benefit of decades of life to acquire knowledge. And we always lead from a place of self-interest. So in other words, we want to feel safe. We have to always remember, young people, and the science proves this, first of all, their brains are not fully developed. And then you couple that with trauma, because many of these young people have experienced trauma. Many of them have lost loved ones to homicide. Many of them have been shot themselves. I know, because I've worked for an organization that that worked directly with young folks who were victims of violent crime. So trauma already exists. And that gathering you saw Sunday, right, that is also called that the spirit of Oakland. You know, it's interesting, like when people talk about Oakland, they talk about the Black Panthers, but they really didn't pay attention to what the true mission of the Panthers was. It's a form of revolution. It's a revolutionary response to a society, to a governance structure that still has failed to center the needs of our young people. So you're going to see these gatherings, and they're going to continue. Because at the end of the day, once again, it's a privilege to say the most fearful thing I am experiencing is the coronavirus. These young folks are experiencing things that a lot of us don't even understand. And for us to operate from a place of judgment, I want to end on this note. We have to be very careful, because some of the same energy and rhetoric that's being used to criminalize these young folks, that was the same energy that led to the creation of this mass incarceration complex, right? Holding people responsible for drugs and guns that they themselves didn't even bring into the community. So now we know today in 2020 that was a mistake, but I'm still seeing that same energy carry out, and it's sad. It really is.
Let's dig a little bit deeper into this, and Nita, you can also jump in. I'll start off with John Jones first. You mentioned my kids. You know, my kids are at home, but I control completely their world. They're still in elementary school. They're young. I can pick them both up and carry them out the room if I need to. When we want to watch TV, the only TV in the house, it is mine or their mother's decision, not theirs, right? When we don't want them on the computers, we control that. That's a very different story when you got a 16, 17, 18, 19-year-old that is now living in your house. It's also very different when you have that same body of people in a cramped quarters, if they even have that. So, you know, we have a couple of rooms. We have an upstairs and a downstairs, but I know people that are five deep into an apartment, and it's not all good. You talked about safety, and I think you mentioned there's some places where you go home and the mommy's beating the daddy. I mean, the daddy's beating the mother all upside her head, right? And so the only place you can do is leave. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think people forget about that sort of scenario. I mean, how do you control a 17-year-old, an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old? And think back to what people were doing who are older when they were 16, 17, 18 years old. You know, people sneaking out houses, doing everything, and all of a sudden they're 40 and 50 and they want to point a finger, but these are your kids in theory.
Excellent. In fact, if anyone has an answer to that question, please let me know, because I have a 17-year-old son as well, and I can tell you right now, teenagers would do what they want to do. It's almost next to impossible to really expect parents to essentially barricade their kids into the house. You know, you mentioned cramped quarters. A lot of us are living in what I consider to be substandard housing conditions, right? And the challenge of having teenagers specifically who is full of energy and want to go out, you know, you might say, okay, you've been camped in this house. You can go outside on the front porch. But we have to always remember impulse is real, right? And that lack of impulse control, you seeing a buddy, you seeing a friend. We have to remember these young people have been required to stay within, for those who even have that privilege of doing so, for nearly a month now. So it's very difficult, as well as with everything else that's going on, you know? So I think that when we talk about young people, and let's be clear, because of the housing crisis in Oakland, as well as other cities, we're not just talking about 16 and 17-year-old kids who are staying at home. We have people 20, 21, 22, 24, who are, for all intents and purposes, adults. So how do you have that conversation with someone who is legally adult, who has the right to make their decisions?
Real
You're
point.
Forced with very few options, right? You can say, hey, go abide by my rules or get out the house. Do we really want to kick our young people out at a time where everything that's going on in the world? So at the end of the day, these issues are very complex, and we have to always be mindful of that before we lean from a place of judgment.
It's interesting you said that, because we're putting a moratorium on evictions, and essentially you can't evict your kids. If you think about that,
right.
You know. Nita, what would you add to this, you know, this observation? There's a lot of things that we tossed out. You yourself have a teen, a young adult that you live with, and just knowing from the people that you're dealing with who are houseless, how are you seeing this?
Well, there's a few things. One, for ourselves, so my daughter and I, we live in a camper. We're not sheltering in place because we're doing essential work, but we're geared up and constantly geared up out there. But if we were to be sheltered in place, we would kill each other. How do you actually, you know what I'm saying? Just not to be crazy sounding, but if you're in a camper with a teenager and a mom and you're not allowed to leave, we'd go crazy. We would go totally crazy. I think also for unhoused youth, you know, going to school is one of their releases for the street. For the youth that we know that are living in tents or living in vehicles, going to school was a good thing for them. It was a place where they could actually have some kind of normalcy. And so what we're seeing is that they don't have that now. They are stuck, you know, in their tents, and people aren't stuck in their tents. There's no social distancing happening. It's unrealistic for people to believe that social distancing can happen. That was part of the moratoriums on eviction that got passed on Friday that I did not agree with, is that rather than house people immediately, they're telling people, the legislation that was passed by city council actually says that the tents need to be 12 feet apart from each other. That's not going to happen. If an encampment already exists, you can't expect people to suddenly, in the middle of all this, you know, reformat their landscape of where people's tents are at. You know, one thing is I homeschooled my daughter, too. So we have a very different relationship. We get along very well, and she's not a typical teenager. She was not socialized by the school system. She has a social life, which she very much misses right now, but she was not socialized by the school system. And what I call secondary socialization that happens between the students that has nothing to do with academics. But I do want to say for all the families out there that are finding themselves being forced to homeschool their children, my prayers are with you. We're actually, a bunch of us who do homeschool our kids are putting together some resources for folks that'll be online. But I personally have this little fantasy that people who are being forced to homeschool their children right now fall in love with it and actually decide, like, once, you know, the shelter in place is removed, that they start talking about maybe this is what we want to do. Because if we can get a massive amount of folks, Black folks, Brown folks, Indigenous folks, undocumented folks, to start homeschooling their children, that's our future. And if we want to see some massive social change, continuing to homeschool our children at the level that they're being forced to be homeschooled now will actually change the direction that society could go. Like, that is really the potential we have. I understand that not everyone can homeschool, but I'm excited in the midst. I'm trying to find all the silver linings, you know, that are happening during this difficult time. And that's one of the silver linings I'm finding. Because not only is it going to be, you know, changing the direction of the future, it's the youth, but it's actually bridging and giving folks the opportunity to bring their families even tighter together. And if the youth and our families are the basis of society, and we're actually having an opportunity to stop and reset what that looks like at that moment, that's actually a blessing in disguise during this crazy time. That families actually get to have quality time together. How many people get quality time with their kids? But they don't, because they're busy just doing the grind, the 9 to 5, the 9 to 9, and don't even get to spend time with their kids. Don't even maybe even know their kids because they're working so hard to provide for their kids. So I think, you know, we all have to look at the blessings in this moment.
There are levels to that. And I definitely, yeah. You know, I think a lot of people have been thinking of that. But I'm also looking at the families that right now, and John, maybe you can also chime in on this, because I think this is relevant to what you wrote. I know families right now that are home, and they have their kids, but they're not getting an income. And we're going on to a month, and now we have another month. And so I can go to the store and get some groceries, but the dude next door, he can't do that. And he got 2 teenagers that he got to feed. Now we have a whole different thing. People waking up and they're hungry, and you're telling them they can't go out? You're telling them to stay in the house? There's one TV and they don't even have cable, right? There's only one computer. There's a phone that's now turned off because they couldn't pay the phone bill. All these things add to attention, and for many folks who grew up in households where the income was a major factor, that has led to abuse, that has led to divorce, that has led to all kind of stuff that I think people just don't think about. And people all of a sudden overnight are dealing with that right there on the spot. So you can't drive your car, you can't do your little gig job, and you're short on that. And so I'm kind of contextualizing some of the things that I don't think we've thought about and I don't think has been addressed. John, you work with a lot of youth that have come out of those type of predicaments. Can you add a little bit more insight to this and what we might want to consider doing and thinking about as we move forward? Because this is going to be happening for another month. And I'm just wondering, like, man, you got another month where you got to figure out what you're going to do. And you may not have a job when this is all over. Whew, that's a lot of weight to carry. And that's a different type of weight than somebody who's like, well, you know, I was able to stay at home. You know, me and my wife, we had date night and all that good stuff. Well, there ain't no date night in the house when you don't have no money. So, you know, and you're scrubbing and trying to figure out where you're going to do, how you're going to make ends meet. So, John, what would you add to this from the youth that you've worked with?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think it's very important, once again, for people to remember that prior to Corona, many people were suffering severely from a financial standpoint, right? And, you know, one of the things in Oakland, that there's always the need for what we call the hustle, that side gig to supplement our income. So let's just start with the parents who are still forced enough to work. Some of us can work from home. That's privilege. I'm in that place. I can work from home. I'm still getting paid. I don't have to worry about that. There are some folks who have jobs that is considered essential service, but they cannot work from home. So let's start with who is able to, quote unquote, watch their kids while they're away. Because we have to always also remember this, the impact of displacement in Oakland specifically. It used to be a village, but what happens when your family members, your loved ones have been displaced, when they no longer live in Oakland? I'm in that situation. I'm the only person in my immediate family that lives in Oakland. All my siblings and my mother live in different states. So we have to look at it from that standpoint. Number two, for young people who grow up in poverty, you know, I was that young person who recognized being raised by a single parent mother as early as 8 and 9 years old. I was out there hustling, whether it was at the gas station, you know, pumping gas, selling newspaper subscriptions. We have a lot of young people who are also, their parents are dependent upon any type of source of income they can bring in. Right. And I just want to throw some in for that. There are many people, including elders, who rely on recycling. Right. They have to go out on recycle day and they're gathering up these recyclable items. So that is a real that's a real dynamic that's in place. And to your point, this thing was not well thought out, partly because although these issues were pre-existing, there never was any real movement toward addressing that. So now we're seeing things worsen. And the last thing is this, you know, for those who are suffering, we know that one of the leading driving forces behind domestic violence and things like that is financial insecurity. We have to also be mindful that I know personally many couples who cohabitate, not out of love, but out of need, right? A lot of people are not, quote-unquote, shacking up because, hey, I want to be with you and spend the rest of my life with you. I know couples who have broken up, but because of the high rent in Oakland, have the inability to either A, move out, or B, for the person who remains there, they can't fully pay their rent. So we have all these pre-existing things, and this right here is the perfect storm for worse harm. And that's why at the end of the day, I want to encourage everyone, spend this time checking in on those who have young kids, because I have a five-year-old and little kids that age. David, you know, they command a lot of time and attention. Mm-hmm. A lot of energy, and they're cooped in the house. Check in on those who are struggling financially. Everyone might not be as willing to share what they're going through, because it's about pride too, right? No one wants to be seen as weak or as a victim, but these things are no less real, and we have to all make sure that people in our community, that we're staying in touch with them, loved ones, family members. We all know what goes on in our families. We may not talk about it, but this is a perfect opportunity for us to step in as far as solutions are concerned. And whatever we can do to help people, that's what we have to do.
Yeah, maybe people can get a gift card or something for somebody and, you know, be like, hey, man, this is for you, or, you know, and keep it moving, you know, so they can go to the store and get what they need on their own. Let me ask you both this. There's also a certain set of normalizing that is going on, too. And I started off by saying, what was going on over the weekend, what got demonized and what was either ignored or even praised. So I'm by the lake. That lake was packed this weekend. Sunday, it was packed, right? There was people hanging out like it was any other Sunday, right? There are people that have commented on Facebook about it. But these are people that, you know, if you live by the lake, you know, folks who live there now, they probably got a few dollars and they're just getting exercise. They're getting sunlight. They're just chilling, but there was no social distancing going on. There are people that were going to the beach. There were people all up in the hills, thick. Like, you couldn't go to many of the parks. It was just packed, right? And so I bring this up to say that if I'm 16, 17 years old, and I'm like, man, people hanging out at the lake, people at the farmer's market, people up in the hills, people actually having parties. They call them, not online, but I'm saying there've been people having little wine parties around here. It's business as usual. And then you turn on the TV, president is like, I'm gonna be open by Easter, right? So you got that sort of skepticism followed by news pundits that have added on. And then you got folks online who are saying, oh, this is all a hoax, this is all a fake, and wooty wooty whoop. I mean, at the end of the day, it's like, why wouldn't I be outside? You down by the lake, why can't I be out doing my thing that I do every weekend with the cars? So when we have this normalization that's happening, how much does that impact folks? Because I said, and I think you also said in your article, this didn't happen in a vacuum. You know, you can't expect that you're going to chill at the lake and everybody in East and West Oakland is just going to stay sheltered in place if they're 16, 17, and you 40 and 50 years old hanging out with your friends, drinking wine during a pandemic. Anybody want to hit that?
I think that it goes back to, you know, there's this issue. Let's just name it. There's a level of racism happening here when we're trying to get mad at black youth, because that's who's at the sideshow, black youth, brown youth. And thinking it's just great and fine for, you know, grown-ups who are lighter complexion to do the same exact thing, but in their own way. And I think, you know, we wouldn't have sideshows if we actually had something in place for young people to do. The sideshows came out of the fact that, you know, they closed the Grand Prix, they closed, you know, midnight basketball. There was nothing for youth in the East to do. And I was actually part of an effort with, the late Elder Freeman, rest in peace, and Wilson Riles back in 2005. We tried to work with Desley Brooks to try to get the sideshows to become a legal event that happened in the Coliseum parking lot, so that, you know, all the complaints from, you know, residents could be addressed, and, you know, put food trucks in there, put services for youth in there. You know, we were really trying to do something, make something, improve on what the young people have created and that, you know, has started, you know, so many years ago. But of course, that was shut down. If I mean, the real issue goes back to like the lack of equity and the disparity amongst what is offered to young Black and Brown folks. If that's the beginning end of, you know, then the attacks that they get. It's like there isn't enough stuff for young people to do, so then they create something to do themselves, and then they're criminalized for it. It's like a formula, you know. But I also think going back, I want people to really think of what we're seeing happening with the economics and the economics falling apart. We're actually witnessing the system fall apart. And I want to name that. We are witnessing the system fall apart, which means that there's going to be more repression, which means there's going to be more military intervention. Because when people start rioting, come on, let's be real. When people start rioting because they cannot feed their children, because they not feed themselves, and we already see the government's not stepping up. They didn't think this plan out well. They're not putting things in place to actually make sure that people are really going to be safe. And if they want to extend the shelter in place, they're still not talking about. I mean, if we're talking, you know, landlords are sitting here crying about back pay, you know, back rent. Well, what about back pay for people? You know, with my hustle, with the Lumpy Lady hustle, you know, we have no income coming in right now at all. And I was just literally right before you called, I was just having a conversation with my daughter of like, we need to figure out what we're going to be doing, because what little money we do have, that's going to, you know, we're being very sparse with how we spend it with, you know, our provisions and whatnot. But I think what this time is going to be calling for is that we begin to create our own systems, which is what a lot of us have been talking about, self-determination, right? Do for self, take care of each other. This moment, again, the silver lining, this moment is going to force us to create those self-determined systems that we are taking care of ourselves. And we should not expect the government to take care of us, because they've never taken care of us, not properly.
Right.
So these are the moments, so that, you know, this is a moment for us to get those systems in place so that we are taking care of ourselves. And that's what it's going to take, is that we take care of each other.
Appreciate that. John, what would you add as we get ready to close out? What do you want to leave people with? Some insight, some jewels, some gems that we need to take in terms of moving forward and actually helping. And I just want to also remind people, like somebody like John can't go out in theory to the sideshow and counsel folks like you probably normally would. A lot of people who you would be that mentor that would be there, you're supposed to be sheltered in place. They would be looking at you crazy for being out there trying to intervene if you were to be, you know, that sort of person. And so it's kind of a catch-22. You know, you put yourself at risk, you're in trouble if you do, you know, all these different types of things. And at the same time, we have these really pervasive systemic problems that have not been addressed.
No, you're absolutely right. And in fact, I live in East Oakland near Fremont High School. So I live in walking distance of where the sideshows took place Sunday. In fact, there's one that takes place often right around the corner from my house. But to your point, because, you know, with shelter in place, that wouldn't be seen as essential service. So I would not be allowed to go out there. That's why you definitely see no video from me, just to be sure. But I think I do want to leave your viewers with a few key points, a few key takeaways. And I want to start with, as you were describing, the normalization of these issues. That's how white supremacy operates. Anytime that Black and Brown and Indigenous people of color are participating in any type of activity, it's always criminalized. When white people do it, it's glorified. I want to start with this show, Dukes of Hazzard. I used to watch that as a kid, you know, late 70s, early 80s, right? And my mother's from the Deep South, and she used to tell me, because I didn't know what those stars and bars was, you know, the General Lee. And she educated me on that. But the point, I'm bringing this up for a reason. If we think about that, Uncle Jesse, they were bootleggers. Uncle Jesse was making moonshine. There's lots of parallels between the sideshow and NASCAR. If we look back to the times of Prohibition, right, the government said, okay, alcohol is a serious health issue. Let's make it illegal. We know we cannot legislate human behavior, right? The law only says what's right and wrong, and usually from the standpoint of the decision maker, right? So there's nothing inherently transformative in that. And as a result, we have people like Al Capone, who is still glorified today. All these movies about things that he did, when it's someone that looks like a European, is treated differently. So the federal government at that time realized their error in making alcohol illegal, and they legalized it again. But the onset of that was the start of NASCAR, because you had to have the ability to evade law enforcement. So that meant you were the very good driver. They took something that was used for illegal purposes and they made it legal. We call it NASCAR. Sure. So, to Nita's point, like, these conversations have been going on in our community for years, right? What would it look like to have a sanctioned sideshow? And to be clear, there are other cities in California, such as Sacramento and San Diego, who have these events. We have the space. Mm-hmm. If you consider the Coliseum complex, you know, that's the entity that will be vacant soon. The only tenant there now is the A's. Taxpayers are on the hook for millions of dollars for that bond debt from 1995 and for Oracle Arena in 1996. What would it look like to have a sanctioned sideshow in an area that, first of all, is secluded, meaning it's not in a residential area. It's industrial, so you're not disturbing mm-hmm. the neighbors, particularly our elder residents. Number two, it can easily be contained because it's bordered about 880, right? Number three, it can also raise funds, right? You can charge the participants to attend, right? You can charge the drivers. Everyone sign a waiver. You can't hold the city responsible for anything that happens, and use those proceeds to hire people from the community as security. Hmm. At the end of the day, everyone deserves entertainment, and we have to always be mindful that our young folks, they're still young. And by that, it's like they don't have the burden that many of us older folks have. Like we spend too much time in our head worrying about all these fears, right? When you're young, you just want to live. You want to exist. You want to be in the moment. Because once again, this is a population that's already severely impacted by other issues. So at the end of the day, it's incumbent upon us, especially as Black and Brown and Native folks, to not fall for the same tricks we did during the mass incarceration phenomenon. Because once again, as they said in that movie, Straight Outta Compton, AKs come from Russia, cocaine come from Colombia, nobody in the hood got a passport. And today, and on this note, the East Oakland I grew up in, right, I came of age during the 80s. You know, Nita mentioned this, we had Malibu Grand Prix, we had the Castle, we had three movie theaters, there was a bowling alley, we had Mojo Skating Ring. These things were safe spaces for me and my friends coming up at a time when Oakland began to transition into the crack phase, right, when the violence really exploded. We have places that we can escape. Our young people don't have that. My 17-year-old son used to always tell me he's bored because they don't have things to do. If you want to go to a movie theater and you live in East Oakland, you literally have to leave the East. You're either going to Bayfair or you're going downtown.
Or Emeryville.
It's one thing. Right, or Emeryville, right? And then we have to be mindful that these places are not safe for our young people, because when they go there, you got folks looking at them as if they're thugs or they're there to steal, and then here come the role of law enforcement. So we can't try the same things over and over again. We cannot use law enforcement when they are problematic. Let us not forget that we have a police department that's been under federal review for nearly two decades. So at the end of the day, we have resources, there's money. We're not using our money wisely to address these issues. And just simply operating from a place of self-righteousness, saying what these young people need to do, we got to realize what Pac said, thug life, the hate we gave little infants, it F's everybody. And that's where we're seeing. And then one last thing I think is very important, because this is from a generational standpoint when we talk about our families. Prior to the crack cocaine epidemic, many households were pretty much intact. Like, we knew there was drugs prior to crack, right? There was powder cocaine, there was heroin, but the family unit was still relatively intact. Crack literally destroyed generations, whether it's through incarceration, whether it's through substance abuse or homicide. So now we have a dynamic where many young people, they're not being raised by their parents. In a lot of cases, they're being raised by grandparents who are two generations removed, who don't understand social media. When I came of age, we didn't have social media. So when we talk about a sideshow, it was literally word of mouth. Today, you can go on all on these little things they have on social media, and you can share the word about where people are going to be. So that also makes it difficult for parents when young people have access to that, and also the role of government in terms of how we even discipline our children. I know that's another conversation. I'm not here to debate the pros and cons of that, but in a lot of ways, parents' authority have been undermined. as well as all these other existing conditions. So at the end of the day, if we start from the sideshow itself, instead of telling young people what they should not do, how about we operate from a more transformative standpoint, engage with them, see what's going on in their lives, and see what we can do to, above all, improve the quality of life for them.
And let them know that they're needed. You know? Like, let them know, hey, you know, John, Jill, Jack, you're needed. You know, we need you, and here's how that need can be executed. But, you know, to wag the finger at one group and then praise or completely ignore the throngs of people by the lake or farmers market and other places is just a hype of hypocrisy, and I think people see that. They're not dumb. You know, I saw it, you know, I saw it very clear when people were willing to point the finger, and it's like, you was just at the lake. Like, how dare you? You know, you were just hanging out with your friends, but you're going to talk about some kids. And in theory, you know, since you're an adult, maybe you need to go talk to those kids. And it just becomes something that, you know, it masks something, you know, that's very hypocritical, a double standard and, you know, and privilege at the end of the day. John Arthur Jones.
Can I add one thing real quick?
Yes.
Can I add one thing real quick, Debbie? This is very important. So I mentioned this too in my post. Here is how young people see their value, how they're not being valued or undervalued by society. Remember, New Year's Eve, the Asian guy that had his laptop stolen, and he proceeded to chase after the people, and sadly, you know, he died. He succumbed to injuries resulted to that chase.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in the community came together. There was a vigil, you know, honoring his life, and people were grieving, and rightfully so, over what happened. Now, I want to juxtapose that with the fact that the first homicide in Oakland in 2020, this year, was a 17-year-old boy. Not man, a boy. I didn't see the same level of recognition of this young person's life in the tragic homicide that took place. So, once again, we're talking about young people, black and brown youth, who already recognize that the greater society, when I say society, let's be clear, some of the judgment is coming from their family members, too. So I only can imagine what some of these young people are being taught. Just judging off the reaction that people was, you know, speaking from on social media, I can see why some of these young folks feel rebellious. Because at the end of the day, everyone deserves dignity. Everyone deserves to be seen, to be valued. And we have to stop this dynamic of only highlighting certain cases of harm. Every life is significant. And if we're not conveying that message, you're talking once again to young people whose brains are not only fully developed, but I'm in on this note. I myself, as someone who went from a straight A student, right, to I get to a point where at 12 years old, I was shot at. Close range. So grace of God, I didn't die. At 12 years old, experiencing being slammed against the wall. I remember you made a comment about that. You asked me, did I report the officer? Keep in mind, this is 1986 at a time where we knew in our community, if your house was burglarized, which ours was often, you call the police at 3:30, you lucky if they show up. And if they do, it's at 11 o'clock. So we learn early that we don't have value. So we respond from that place. So that's why, once again, when I talk about privilege, some people have the privilege to where they might live in a community where the police might be responsive, who knows. They might have the privilege of telling people to stay in a home, this, that, and the other. They may have the privilege of having a full refrigerator. Not only are people living check by check, but some people, the hustle requires them to be active daily.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I came up in that household as well. You know, I was required at 12, 13 years old to have a paper route, wash cars, deliver groceries, and do some sort of extracurricular activity. And like you said, for many people, that is an essential part of the contribution to the household. It's not a privilege of you doing it. It's a necessity. And I think people kind of forget that. And even in 2020, that still goes on. John Jones, we appreciate you taking time. Nita B, we appreciate you taking time out this afternoon. Nita, how can people get a hold of you and help with the work that you're doing out there in these streets?
If folks want to provide, we're doing grocery distribution, hot meal distribution, sanitation supply distribution, and just regular provision distribution that we normally do. Folks can reach me directly, 510-355-7010. Actually, the best way to reach me is to text me at that number, 510-355-7010. We hit the streets on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, and then, you know, every Tuesday, every Wednesday, we're out there. And then I make my rent.
Okay, your phone is, ooh boy, it went in there. Give that number one more time.
510-355-7010. The best way to get a hold of me is to text me. Then I will definitely get your message. Again, that's 510-355-7010.
And John, how do people get a hold of you or help out with the stuff that you're doing?
Yes, people can also reach me by text, area code 510-830-6817. Once again, that's area code 510-830-6817. One of the things we're doing is, as we was talking about, the potential for violence is being a resource for folks, a safe place that they can turn to. We're organizing folks as first responders, as well as even essential needs like toilet paper. You know, when I make my runs, I canvass the local stores because we know there's been a shortage. So that's information I'm not going to share publicly because we don't want the wrong people coming in hoarding. So even things like that, small things that people take for granted is huge. I know plenty of people who got just one roll of toilet paper.
Real talk. And, yeah, you keep those spots secret. And as you should. So the community can have it. We're going to take a break on Hard Knock Radio. We'll be right back.
Hard Knock Radio. We're rocking with Picasso.
What?
And Maya.
Who?
And my last name is Susana. Yeah, yeah.
You know, one of the things, when I very first met Mitzi, it had to be about 08, 09. My friend Chris Pringle brought him to me and was like, yo, I have this dude, he's really dope, he's a publicist, I want you to meet with him. So I went to his house and met with him. He had this map on his wall, and it outlined all the gang territories, like all, it had the neighborhood, like it had, it was so specific, like it was just like really impressive to me. And he just knew every hood, every neighborhood, every set, every, you know, everything. He had this outline on his wall, and then he had like this stack of books, and I think at the time he was reading Art of War, all these different, like, these different books. And he just was talking about, you know, his plan, and it wasn't a plan to get out of the hood, it was just a plan to change the hood. And even at that time, he was still kind of, I won't say straddling the fence, but, you know, it was no secret that, you know, he was a Rolling 60s clip, and, you know, he was kind of, you know, in between both worlds. And so I know Big U and all of them were, you know, kind of trying to reel him in, and so he would stay focused.
Yeah, for people who don't know, let me just, you know, Big U is a well-known individual in Los Angeles who's a shot caller, and has worked with many of the artists to, one, keep them protected, and two, steer them in another direction. For people going, Big U, who's that? No, that's a major factor. Yeah, because you're on the air in the Bay, so in LA they would know, but up here a lot of people wouldn't, and around the country that are listening. So he's a major factor. But anyway, you said Big U was trying to reel him in.
You know, because he was just different from a lot of the artists that I had been working with or dealing with, you know, from South Central. And he just, like you said earlier, he had a different narrative, like, to his music. And although, you know, people could hardly see past the gangbang, and sometimes I'm very glad that he was able to, you know, let people see who he was as he grew. He could be a little hard-headed sometimes, but he got it together, you know. And he was just such an important voice for us that I hate is gone, because he was just at the beginning of what he was trying to do with buying up this community, going back to Slauson and Crenshaw and opening up the Marathon and employing people from his neighborhood and educating these youngsters about, you know, not even what it is about, you know, what gang life was about and why you should get out, but how to get along with, you know, how Crips and Bloods should get along and make money, and how the police and the gang members should start a new conversation, and you know, instead of fighting against each other, how do we coexist? And, you know, for him, it was more about love than anything else, and people don't see that. People don't understand that.
You know,
some people do. People who know him do.
We refinancing this year. We paying everything off.
Let's get in touch with all our depth doors.
LD, we go foreign silly. Just my section might throw a belly. In my section, we getting busy. Operation buy back to 60s. Gentrified the whole inner city. Genocide the whole inner city. Ziggins buying up every belly. Best was tying up every milli. Round table, time to campfire. Told my niggas there was vampires. Never let them sink tape in us. One strip mark, got 3 minutes. Bounce back like John Dilly. Build brands like Sean Diddy. Human hair coming from the east. Ziggins selling bundles now through elite. By any means, niggas gotta eat. Fat burgers, niggas gotta eat. Crenshaw since 85, got Jay-Z off TMC. Every tape do a million plus. On TuneCore, I got 10 up. Contracts non-retroactive. Big word, but you get the message. Big checks, go get the checklist. We call it rallies, you call it checkers. I f*** the wings, but I'm not invested. Tell Rose that I'm trying to network. Pop your trunk now, make your set work. James Brown, gotta do your leg work. James Brown, you gotta do your
it's
leg work.
Buy back the block. Buy back the block. It's time to buy back the block. Buy back the block. It's time to buy back the hood. Buy back the hood. I'm about to buy back the hood. Buy back the hood.
Hey, ho, 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 east, west, north, south, conectados. Every set, every hood, barrio to barrio. Y'all stand up, stay righteous, speaking to the thugs. One love, we know where y'all at. Top, Brown Buffalo. It's a hard knock life, gotta pay your bills. They want a song about bling, but it ain't real. We speak to the kids and the OGs. Organize, mobilize, be the change you wanna see. 415s bumping hard knock radio. Brown Buffalo, all up in your stereo. Yo, and to the youth, live life like it's golden. Go dumb, go hard, but don't forget where you're going. We from the hood, so it's all to the good. Let us know this, what you're feeling is right. Let's get this understood. It's only one reason why we here today. We trying to make real music so the people can relate.
Learning from these hard knocks, slipping in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side. Learning from the hard knocks, living in these hard knocks, listening to hard knocks, questioning the poor guy. Learning through these hard knocks, living for this hip hop, listening to hard knocks, ripping to the hard side.
O Portland.
Hi, this is Emma. We are taking a hiatus this week because of COVID-19. So please enjoy this classic episode of Transpositive, and we will be back next week with a new show. In the meantime, listen.